talking about demons. What are the demons?
Voices.
Tell me about them. What are the voices about?
It's another voice, the evil side.
Yeah, whatever your name is, Satan.
Yeah, we are, and we're back on Evil Examined, and as we told you, we're rejoined by Daddy Bass, Steady Eddie, and Mike from Real Judgments this week to discuss the Aaron Hernandez case. Yeah, that's what we got for the Evil Entry that we're doing this week. Again, check us out, www.evilexamined.com, for all of our articles and prior content from our first season and all that fun stuff. And also the Real Judgments podcast and the books and all that shit we always tell you about. But so today, yeah, because we're so close to the anniversary, me and Eddie were talking about doing this episode. And when Bass heard about it, I know you were interested and you wanted to get involved with the episode. And Mike's just here.
I won't go away.
Well, he's a Raiders fan, so I think we got some good balance in here. We got a Giants fan and a Raiders fan to add perspective, and then we have Brian and Eddie, who are both Patriots fans.
Okay, she likes Seattle.
She's a Seahawks. Yeah, I was about to get to that. But. Sorry to cut you. And then, Gene, who's your team?
It's a tie between the Lions and the Panthers.
You like cat-based teams.
Yeah, with silver. He just likes blue.
So there you go. We got a lot of perspectives on it for you. Without further ado, let's get into the Evil Entry. Evil Entry! All right, so Aaron Hernandez. We're going to start it off just kind of going through a general timeline. And then it'll come into a more detailed timeline as we get into it. But we want to keep it kind of high level. We're going to provide you definitely quite a few facts on the case. I've been reading Unnecessary Roughness, Jose Baez's book. And I know, Eddie, you've been doing quite a bit of research and watching some documentaries and stuff.
I've been stalking baby mama's Instagram.
There you go. And what was her name?
Shay.
Yeah, Shayana Hernandez. So Katie's been getting the social media perspective. And then, I mean, we're all from New England, so, well, with the exception of Katie, who moved here. But so we've all kind of been here when the case happened and everything and remember some things about it. And I think that might be an interesting place to start. Maybe just, Eddie, what do you recall about when it happened? I mean, being it. Probably one of your more liked players at the time, right? When you heard the news, what did you think?
Yeah, I was completely shocked. I know, so when the arrest took place, it was in June. So it was just a few more months from when training camp was going to start and when the season would start. And I was completely shocked with the fact that there was a murder that was, literally right down the street from his house. Naturally, I thought there was probably some type of involvement based on his, based on his past. And as a Patriots fan, I was devastated because I thought obviously the dynamic duo of him and Gronkowski were you know, it was very beneficial with that offense on the Patriots. So
fortunately, it didn't end up hurting you guys too much in the long run. Maybe in some of those other games, you know, like where you guys didn't end up winning. I mean, what, you guys still end up winning 3 Super Bowls after that,
though, yeah, right? And then we have the season with Gronk where he was out and we made it to the Super Bowl. Obviously, if Hernandez was there, that would give us a tight end that would be able to replace Gronk. So
could have been critical.
Yep.
Yeah. What about you, Daddy?
I remember when I first heard it, I was like, well, first of all, it wasn't far from where we live, you know, like in retrospect, like it's Attleboro, it's up the street.
Yeah, it's like five miles from my house.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I was like, oh man, that's crazy, you know. I didn't know about his past, you know what I mean? So to me, I was like, oh, well, that's weird.
I don't think anybody, I didn't. Did you, were you aware of any of that?
Yeah, I mean, I knew a little bit about it. I mean, I'm just a huge Patriots fan, kind of read up a lot about the different players. And I knew the fact that he fell in the draft because of different character issues and stuff like that. And he always kind of came across as, you know, interesting, you know, and certainly thuggish in certain ways, so.
But, you know, just from my perspective, just looking at him as like a member of the team, you know, when he was on the field, he was always smiling and seemed like he was having a good time. Seemed like a nice guy, you know what I mean?
He had one of those smiles, too. Yeah, he had really dimply.
Like, really didn't come across as someone who was involved in all this crazy shit. So, to me, it was more of a shock, really, when I found out about the involvement. But initially, I was like, oh, shit, that's crazy. He got arrested.
And Mike, as a non-fan living in New England, what did you think about? Were you just happy to see it?
No, I wasn't happy to see it. I thought he was a really dynamic player, played multi positions, and I actually was a fan of him. But when it came out, I was like, damn! Like the thuggish image he portrayed, it actually goes deeper than just an image. So I was kind of shocked by it actually a little bit.
I just have that memory burned in of him in the fucking white T-shirt that was just thrown over him with the cuffs behind his back and the basketball shorts.
Basketball shorts, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? That's when you know it's going down. They don't even allow you to put the shirt on. They're just throwing it on, and you've got the cuffs on already. You're screwed.
It just felt really fast, too. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's funny you say that because, like, Baez was kind of critical of that. He was like, well, you know, like, on a case of this magnitude, a lot of times they'll contact somebody and arrest them, you know, allow them to turn themselves in
so they can
and do it more discreetly so that, like, the public eye doesn't get a sour taste or a skewed view of the case in advance. So he was kind of critical of that, and I kind of felt that was somewhat fair.
Yeah, you know? I mean, we'll go over the timeline, but, I mean, I thought it was interesting. It was 9 days from the time that they found Odin Lloyd's body, from the time that he was actually arrested,
yep.
So when he was brought out of his house. But throughout that entire time, there was media coverage completely outside of his house.
Yeah.
So I think average person, that you're probably definitely right, where it's like all of a sudden you're putting a lot of attention on because based on the fact of how you arrested them. But the media coverage was literally following him everywhere he was going. They were outside of his house. He went to Gillette. You know, he was obviously kicked, you know, he was kicked off the premises of Gillette. He went to his lawyer. He stayed overnight in Boston for a few days,
yep.
And the media literally followed every single move he made. So I don't think there was really that opportunity where he would have been able to pretty much go to the North Attleboro Police Department and turn himself in.
Yeah, it's like they're looking at it from a couple different angles, I guess. It's interesting either way, but you weren't even living here at that time, right? So did you, was that, how impactful was that across, because she was in Seattle, right?
So I knew about it, but I don't even, what year was it that this happened? It was
2013 was when he was arrested and when the murder took place.
I was in Seattle, and so honestly, my first reaction was pretty stupid, and it was like, fucking Patriots. That's what I thought in my head. But after that, just as like kind of a generic football fan, like I like college football. I've gone to games my whole life. Like I think it's a really cool sport, but I don't get as super in depth or involved in it as you guys do, right? So in my head, I didn't have that whole background of everything. I just thought to myself, like, okay, there's a lot of politics involved with football. I wonder what's going to happen with this. Like, anytime someone who is famous and involved and has a huge paycheck and contract attached to them, it's interesting to see, like, what? You think about OJ, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how the courtroom drama is going to play out, like, if, what factors fall into it. And despite how much someone is getting paid and how successful they are, like, that's every... Not every little kid's, like, some people want to be archaeologists, but that's a lot of little kids' dreams, right? Like, to grow up and be a professional sports player, and despite all of that, like, they still get in fucking trouble. Like, and, you know, like, that's what I thought in my head.
Just shows you that they're just humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you could, well, that's the thing, too. I mean, a lot of these guys are from inner-city environments, right? That's a way out, you know? There's only a few way out that... people seem to utilize, like, so a lot of times it could be music right? is one, right? Sports is another. And then, you know, you have your other cases where people just go on to get their education. But then there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that kind of go the other route. And they go into the seedy underbelly of the city and get involved with drugs and things like that. Because it's kind of all around you. You know what I mean? I mean, we've all had friends that we just saw have other opportunities. But because of the culture... and things that were glorified when we were younger, maybe they just took a different path, you know?
It's like they leave the hood, but the hood doesn't leave them kind of thing.
Right. And it's like, you know, that's why I always wonder, like, when you see somebody, like, especially, like, an athlete with the drunk driving stuff, there's just no need. Like, you have enough money to where you could just get an Uber or...
pay a driver.
Yeah, you could have a limo.
You could pay anybody to drive you around at that point.
Like, yeah, you could even have one of your friends... just
people
drive your
want
own
to hang
sober.
Out with you just because of your job. Like in Seattle, there would be Seahawk players like getting in fights in clubs and shit. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But at the same time though, I also think about when I was younger, right? Like when I was in my early 20s, the stupid shit that I was doing. These are just kids, essentially, you know.
Especially Hernandez, yeah. He was
23, right?
We look at him, right? And we go, these are grown men. But yeah. Then we think about yourself at that age, yeah. And you might, you know, it's
pretty sure we were older and we still not acting like children.
And even that, it's just completely different for them, right? Because they're young, they have all these entitlements, they have a lot of money, they have the fame, they have people flocking at them, and they're still trying to be human. Where ourselves, like, we were just dumbasses, but we didn't have all that other shit that carried around with us, right? Yeah. We didn't have all that pressure, so
yeah.
I could imagine whatever we felt or whatever we did, it's... you know, it's obviously magnified with everything that comes with what they have to deal with.
And I think that makes a guy like a Larry Fitzgerald, like, really admirable, you know, like a guy that, you know, he got the big football scholarship, right? But he still finished his education, you know, like while he was in the NFL, he was still getting a degree because that was a promise he made to his mother before she passed away. So, I mean, there's other tales of the story, too, where people just... do all the right things, but those aren't the ones we really hear about, you know? Right. You're not going to hear... nobody's going to remember that Larry Fitzgerald got his fucking diploma or his college certificate, you know? But you'll remember Aaron Hernandez for the murders he committed, but I guess so. Yeah, we'll go through... we'll start going through a timeline and we'll just all kind of weigh in with some thoughts on it. We're going to start way back, November 6th, 1989. Aaron... Joseph Hernandez, is it Joseph? Am I saying that right? Is that his middle name?
I believe so.
Was born to Terry Valentine Hernandez and Dennis Hernandez in Bristol, Connecticut. So he was born November 6th, which would end up being the same birthday as his daughter, too, ironically. I heard some things about his mom that she actually was a bookie and that she got... knocked, but didn't do any time. But she was like orchestrating bets in Connecticut and shit for like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars and stuff. So she...
when she was younger, but I believe at the time of his arrest, she was working for like the school department or something like that in the administration.
Yeah. She had straightened out completely, but I just thought that was kind of interesting.
When she was a bookie, was it like specifically football or did it...
I think it was all sports. This information? Okay. I think she was just taking bets, you know, and like she just had to kind of organize the winners and losers and all that shit. But And then we'll jump further ahead to January 6, 2006. Aaron Hernandez's father, Dennis, dies due to complications from a hernia operation. And at that time, Aaron was just 16. So let's talk about his father a little bit, because I feel like he's a pretty interesting character. What do you know about his dad?
Yeah, I think from what I know about his father, it seemed like both his, you know, Aaron's father and his uncle were big into sports, you know, so they were really the ones that got the name in Bristol, Connecticut for being good athletes. And then obviously Aaron and his brother DJ carried on that legacy. So I think there was pretty high expectations for both Aaron and DJ to be really good athletes based on the fact that, you know, I think their, you know, their father and their uncle already set some school records in school. I believe he was a janitor for the school, or I know he worked for the school.
I think he was.
In some capacity.
Yeah.
And certainly he had very high expectations of the kids, was very demanding. I know there was stories afterwards that he was, you know, tend to have some physical abuse on the kids and stuff like that. So,
and there's even an incident too where, like, you know, it's that situation where these guys were great athletes and now they're older, they're living vicariously through the kids. There's one story where he punched a fucking youth football coach in the face because he was arguing with him about a call in one of Aaron's games or something like that.
Yeah, so that's what I heard as well, that he was pretty much living vicariously through his kids because, you know, he was successful, but it doesn't sound like he was as successful, as promising as obviously Aaron and DJ were.
Yeah, and like you said, I think they said alcohol would be involved sometimes, but then other times he'd just beat the shit out of him for whatever reason. Just
a bad day. And,
I think it was DJ, who's now known as Jonathan. He changed his name to Jonathan Hernandez. He said that one time he picked the phone up and he was like going to call the police and shit. He was like, yo, I'm going to call for help. Like, you can't keep doing this to us. And then he's like, go ahead and call them. Like, after you hang the phone up though, they're going to have to pull me off of you. Like, he's basically saying, I'm just going to beat the fucking ever loving shit out of you right now. And you're going to have to take that beating until they get here. So he didn't call, but that's just one example, you know?
So they were obviously abused, you know?
Yeah. And more than just physically abused, right? So I guess because we're talking about Aaron when he's younger, this might be a good time to discuss the sexual abuse that he endured too. That his brother, I believe he went on, what, Dr. Oz, was it?
Dr. Oz, and he ended up writing a book, I believe, as well.
He wrote a book too. And he said that Aaron was forced to perform oral sex on an older teenager, I believe, when he was like, was he 13 or something?
Yeah, he was young.
He was young. I'm sorry, I don't recall the exact age, but I know he was young and he was sexually abused for years. And it was something that friends of his knew, like real close friends of his knew about, but like he never really, like, they said he had trouble like getting help or talking about it,
so,
and stuff.
He was forced to do that?
Like orchestrated by his father?
No, actually, his father wasn't involved in the sexual abuse. His father was just the physical. But there was another teenager that was forcing him to perform oral sex on him.
And did they name this person at all or anything?
I don't think they did.
Yeah, I didn't see a name for him.
Yeah, okay. No.
I was just curious.
But I think that's what... And then that caused Aaron to kind of become sexually confused about himself. And that's where there was a piece that the Boston Globe wrote that was discussing, so by his junior year, this is back when he was in high school, he'd become an exceptional pass receiver, particularly with Tim Sansusi's son, Dennis, as quarterback. They were one of the most prolific passing tandems in the state, 9 touchdown completions in just the first 4 games. So they were hooking up a lot. But not just on the field. In Hernandez's junior year, he caught 67 passes, a total of 1,807 yards. It was a Connecticut high school record.
Just too shy.
That's monster numbers. So the two teenagers also shared a life outside of football. Dennis Sansusi told the Globe that he and Hernandez smoked a lot of marijuana before school, before practices, and after games. It had become the beginning of Hernandez's lifelong relationship with getting high before big games. Dennis Sansusi recalled the first day of junior year walking around with Hernandez near the high school. Quote, "We were bait," said Sansusi, who later would join the Marines. For the first time publicly, Sansusi also talked about a now-and-then sexual relationship he had with Aaron, which began in middle school and continued through high school. Quote, "Me and him were very much into trying to hide what we were doing. We didn't want people to know," Dennis Sansusi said in the interview. Sansusi said he and Hernandez worked hard to keep the relationship a secret. In their traditional community of Bristol, where Dennis was bound for the military and Aaron was a big-time football player, it was not something that they wanted people to know about. For Aaron, it would not have played out well at home, especially with Dad. Dennis Hernandez had long had concerns that Aaron, as a boy, had a feminine way about him. The way he stood, the way he used his hands, his brother said. He also remembered one of Aaron's early ambitions that sent his father over the edge. Quote, "I remember he wanted to be a cheerleader. My cousins were cheerleaders and amazing," Jonathan said. "And I remember coming home and, like, my dad put an end to that really quick, and it was not okay. My dad made it clear that he had his definition of a man. The home environment in general was deeply homophobic. Faggot was used all the time in our house," Jonathan said. All the time. Standing, talking, acting, looking. It was the furthest thing my father wanted you to even look like in our household. This was not acceptable to him. Hearing this sort of harsh talk must have been hard for the teenager exploring his sexuality, though Aaron kept his thoughts to himself. He was also privately nursing another sort of sexual hurt. Jonathan said that Aaron disclosed later in his adult life that he had been sexually molested as a young boy. Jonathan declined to say more to the Globe about the revelation. One of Aaron's lawyers in his criminal case, George Leontire, also said Aaron had spoken to him of the sexual abuse as a child. Neither the brother nor the lawyer were willing to identify the perpetrator. Aaron's sexual complexity was one of his closest secrets, one that he hinted at only rarely. His high school quarterback friend was similarly circumspect and for many years. Sansusi said he has finally come out in his late 20s to his family and friends after Hernandez's suicide, despite the difficulty in doing so. He believes that Aaron would be proud of him for that and is publicly acknowledging their past relationship. "I really truly feel in my heart I got the thumbs up from him," he said. Thoughts, guys? Did any of you know about this?
I did, because I watched a documentary with that Sansusi guy was on it. I think it was on maybe Netflix. Or I don't know where I watched it, but I did see that he talked about that relationship that they had.
Is it fucked up to out a dead man?
No, because before that, it was he had when he was in jail after he passed away. There were rumors and stuff about a prison lover or whatnot. So it was already kind of like already starting to come up. So not really.
Yeah, and I think
it's also nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah. No, I know, but he was obviously very private about it.
Because of his dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though his father passed away, it seemed like he had a certain reputation or image to uphold, I think.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they said, he used faggot very freely in the house and, like, was scrutinizing them all the time, it sounded like.
Yeah.
So it's like, and at the same time, he's being molested, you know, while this shit's going on.
The shit about that, though, it seems like it was probably someone close to the family, because they kind of no one will speak on the name.
Yeah.
So it could be like a relative or something. It's just odd, you know, that you would think they would out someone like that that did that to him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's just something else.
The other thing, yeah, like I was thinking it was weird, right? When not even the first molestation or like whatever, when he's being forced, when he's like in middle school or when he's like by an older teenager. But when he goes back and said he was sexually abused when he was, like, even younger than that, like, and no one was aware of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or nobody said anything. that's always, I mean, I don't know, anything can happen. And you know, like he, I don't know, I just don't trust him, basically. Like, I just don't trust things that he says. And it was co-signed Hernandez? By his brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's co-signed by his brother, right?
It's co-signed by his brother. And then it's also co-signed by the Sansusi kid. Not the molestation. That
he said something about him being molested when he was a kid.
I would think he probably... I don't know that they directly quote that, but I would think he'd share that with them.
So,
but I don't know.
Because it's like he told his brother, and then he... And I mean, like, who am I to, like, second guess what he's saying? But he seems like he lies about a lot of different things. Or hides things, too. Or tries to find excuses for behavior, right? Because he's a criminal, you know?
Right.
But... I don't know. That part.
But then he had that other friend that he met, some friends in Florida, like a female friend that he shared it with too, that went to college with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's like a few different people that can kind of corroborate this.
Okay.
I mean, I've looked at the case over the past few days for quite a bit of time, and I can see where you're coming from with that. In my opinion, I guess, though, I don't see the issue or I don't question him with the abuse so much. Because he really didn't, he really never came out and said it. Like, he only said it in private to a few people.
Right.
It's not like he was like, oh, woe is me, all this shit happened, that's why my life is like this. He never said that. It was just all private stuff that got kind of upturned after his death.
Yeah.
You know, people, for whatever reason, you know, I'm not saying his brother said that stuff to make money. He did have a book, you know, like... People do show up on shows. Maybe he was, I mean, his whole family's almost dead by these weird circumstances. You know, his father died when he was young, and then his brother went through this crazy shit, and he's dead now. Maybe he's got good intentions, and he's just trying to talk more about it. But it's like, damn, whenever, you always got to question when there's money involved, too. But,
yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I have no reason to believe that. I mean, obviously, you know, he's kind of questionable with some of his lies and shit like that and making excuses and stuff. But I definitely agree. I think because of the fact that he held this in a private forum and not a public forum, I'd happen to think that it's probably more truthful than false.
So we know that the father went to UConn, right? And they want, you know, DJ was at UConn. And, you know, when Aaron finished up in high school, that was where... He was headed to UConn, kind of to continue the family tradition. But towards later on, like, I guess when it came time to pick a school, he was more like, well, you know, I think I could do much better down in Florida, like at a more high profile school, have a better chance at getting like a career and maybe getting drafted and stuff like that. And his brother was fucking pissed at him. Like, he was like, yo, it's my dream to play with you. You know, and continue the family name, right? You're familiar with this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was his brother's dream to play with him. But then it was, I think he saw it more as a legacy of you carrying on the Hernandez name of what our father started. You're obviously probably the best player that's probably our family has, and you have a opportunity to really make a name for ourselves. And he decided to opt to go to Florida.
Try to catapult.
Yep.
You know?
And there was also rumors that supposedly he wanted to go to Florida because he wanted to get away from some of these bad people that were dragging him down in Connecticut. But I don't necessarily think that's the truth. I think he was making that as an excuse to go to Florida.
Yeah.
Because he was still associating himself with those people, plus new people that he met down in Florida.
Well, he would end up going to Florida. I pulled up some numbers just so we can kind of take a look at it together. Because I'm a big stats guy. I love numbers. Let's take a look at some of his college numbers real quick here. So in 2007, as a redshirt freshman, he was 9 receptions, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, he's really just kind of getting warmed up, so to speak, that first year. I think a lot of freshman years are down on the numbers. You're just getting acclimated. 2008. We see a significant increase in the sophomore season, 34 receptions, 381 yards, 5 touchdowns. And then in 2009, the junior year, this is when he would explode. And actually, before I say these numbers, I'll say that Tim Tebow had to fight to keep him on the team for the junior year. Urban Meyer was done with him. He was like, I don't want him on the fucking team. Constantly failing drug tests, constantly causing problems. He was saying, I don't want him on the team anymore. And he said he was probably one of the best football players that he's ever been around, I guess. But he didn't want him on the team. So that tells you the level of volatility that he was bringing to the organization. And Tim Tebow had to convince Urban Meyer. He said, if you kick him off the team, I'm not going to come and play. Because they were very close, I guess, those two.
Which is kind of shocking that the Patriots would draft him, because Bill Belichick and Urban Meyer are so close.
Right.
You know, and Patriots have drafted a bunch of players that have played for Urban Meyer. So you would assume that Urban Meyer would have given the heads up. But I think the Patriots just saw position. His potential.
Yeah.
And the fact that he dropped to the fourth round. I mean, he was projected a first, a second round pick. Obviously, tons of potential. And I think they thought they could change him.
And I think, yeah, exactly, the Patriot way, right? I think the Patriots were kind of like, oh, well, we can kind of Patriot way him, and he'll probably be able to make some adjustments like a lot of other players have, you know? Like, they've taken on some pretty controversial players and have been able to, you know, squeeze them into diamonds, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
But so he would get to do that junior year because Tim Tebow backed him up. And he would have a monster season, 68 receptions, 850 yards, and 5 touchdowns for that last year. And there would be no senior year because Urban Meyer said, you're out. Like, we're not taking you for a senior year. You better get ready for the draft because we're not having you back because of all the shit he was doing. So that left his college career a total of 111 receptions, 1,382 yards, and 12 touchdowns. He also had one rush for 16 yards. So during his time, I think it's worth mentioning as well that April 28, 2007, Hernandez is involved in an altercation at a Gainesville bar. According to a police report, the case was subsequently settled out of court. So this is the fight where Tim Tebow was there, and
did they serve him like rubbery chicken in a wrap? Is that what happened?
Well, he shattered the man's eardrum, so it's possible. But yeah, basically he bought 2 drinks, didn't pay for them. The manager's like, what the fuck are you doing? He escorted him out, turned around. Hernandez popped him in the ear, busted his eardrum. From everything that I've heard about this, the school came forward to cover this up for him, essentially. So Urban Meyer called a couple people, and they ended up settling it out of court with the guy, and no charges were ever filed against Hernandez for this assault charge here. What should have been an assault charge, right?
Yeah.
January 2007, Aaron Hernandez... Let's see. Sorry. Well, we should mention this. This kind of goes along with his stats. January 2007, Aaron Hernandez enrolls at the University of Florida, having previously given a verbal commitment to play at the University of Connecticut. So we knew about that. January 8th, 2009, Hernandez helps Florida onto the BCS National Championship with a 24-14 victory over the University of Oklahoma. He finished with a team-leading 57 receiving yards. So that's a national championship. Timmy Tebow, guys, let's talk about him. Can you guys give
What's
me... Mike, you kind of look like him.
It's the ultimate Christian, eh? Do no wrong.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's a good balance for him. Would have been a good life coach if you would have listened to him.
Timmy Tebow. I like Tim Tebow.
Remember you and me, we would always go, oh, it's Timmy Tebow. Remember, yeah, like,
I always liked Tim Tebow, but like I can acknowledge the fact that he sucked.
Can you guys show me what Tebowing is?
Well, it's when you get down on one knee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But remember, people forget, though. He beat the fucking Steelers in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, it was a crazy game.
He fucking... But, you like, and I were watching that together.
Yeah, I know, but like, the way that he did it, it was just like so fucked up. Like, he had like no passing yards and shit.
Dude, he hit like a 70-yard strike to win the game in overtime.
Yeah, but I think one that was pass. It, though.
Yeah, that was it. It was one pass attempt. It was
the rest the was like mostly thing. Rushing yards and whatnot and shit. Like,
still, you guys
but one for one with a touchdown. Literally.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was just like a crazy way that he did it.
Yeah, it like, was.
But I remember
it kind of reminded. It was like, kind of like a Blake Bortles kind of thing, you know?
Well, I think Blake Bortles throws more than one time.
Well, but remember when he had that game in the playoffs where there was like no passes almost either? It was very similar. But, Timmy Tebow, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking great. If Timmy Tebow can't save you, then no one can.
Yeah.
And he couldn't save Aaron Hernandez, you know?
It was too late.
I'm sure he... But they were good friends, which was kind of interesting, you know? Kind of like the devil and Satan. I mean, the devil and God hanging out or something, right? Would you say that's a fair analogy?
I feel like a lot of, like, strong Christians are always attracted to, like, people that they can try to save.
Right. They feel there's a purpose there, right?
Yeah.
Well, Eddie, what's your favorite Timmy Tebow moment?
To be honest with you, I'm not a huge college sports fan, so I didn't watch many of his college games.
Me neither. I'm at NFL.
Probably when the Patriots beat them in the playoffs. Yeah.
You know what my favorite moment was? When he was like backup quarterback for the Jets and like, he just had his shirt off and he was all ripped and shit. And he's just like throwing the ball and like creating a quarterback controversy, just being bare chested. It's fucking great, dude. Yeah. He's getting so much attention.
He was on the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a short time.
Too late.
Yeah.
Belichick, I heard Belichick was like considering drafting him too, like that year.
They brought him in as a babysitter, but it was too late.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to Hernandez. December 10th, 2009, Hernandez becomes just the second junior in history to win the John Mackey Award, which John Mackey is one of the greatest tight ends of all time. So that's a pretty prestigious honor. Tells you exactly what the deal is. Then here you go, guys. April 23rd, 2010, the magical day. Hernandez is drafted 113th overall by the New England Patriots in the 2010 draft. Funny how that number 13's in there, huh?
The lucky number.
Yeah.
That's like way after you've stopped watching draft on TV.
I watched at least the first four rounds.
Yeah, four rounds is still.
Yeah. But Hernandez, on February 5th, 2012, Hernandez catches a touchdown pass in the Patriots 21-17 loss to the New York Giants in Super Bowl XLVI. Jeez. Which I remember that touchdown pass, and then he's like doing something like, he's throwing money up
making
or something.
Making it rain.
And I was like, fuck. Because that was the first time in the game that you guys got the lead, I think. And then I was like, damn. We had mad opportunity early in this game to kind of like get further away. And we didn't. We were just like hanging around. Because I felt like we had a hot start to that Super Bowl. And then you guys just came back. And I was like, well, it's over now. Pretty much when he got that touchdown, that's what I thought. But we would get one more score. So let's see.
That's the Tyree catch game, right?
No, that's the Manningham on the sideline catch.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Who was your guys' tight end for that one?
Probably Ben Watson.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, Ben Watson, Daniel Graham.
It's cool how you guys are recycling that shit.
Daniel Graham, dude. Remember him?
Yeah.
He was cool.
Yeah.
Ben Watson's still kicking around in the league, too.
Yeah.
Did he sign with you guys?
Yeah, he's with the Patriots again.
They said they're recycling.
Fucking crazy.
Crazy.
But he was always productive wherever he went.
He went to New Orleans for a while.
Last few years, he was good.
Productive.
Yeah.
Now, he had that great play, too, in the playoffs where he chased down Champ Bailey, I believe, and punched the ball out around the one-yard line. It was a very controversial call because what should have been the call, probably, in my opinion, I hated the Patriots at the time. So I was glad it wasn't, but it should have been a touchback. Instead, the Broncos got it on the 1 yard line. But it looked like the ball to me when he punched it out went out in the end zone, which should have been called a touchback. But I just thought that was a miraculous play for a tight end to chase a cornerback down like that. I was just really impressed by that play.
Yeah, I think they said as you walk into the over near the Kraft's office, it's the only picture that they have of a losing game in the stadium, which is Ben Watson making that tackle about just never giving up.
Yeah, that's like right. Some you can take things from losses too. You know,
yeah.
I feel like people that play stuck in my mind. You know.
Naming your kid Champ just seems like a ridiculous thing.
Right? What about Junior?
But he is. Yeah.
Well, how about Shayana and Shania?
Yo.
Or Aaron with two A's? What the fuck?
That's so dumb. Aaron.
I gotta be honest, that bad call made this Raiders fan a little bit happy, even though it was the Broncos.
Now, before we get into...
Of the tuck rule.
Oh, the rule. That was pretty controversial. I was like, man, that was bullshit. I saw that. You guys must have been going nuts.
So that was the tuck rule.
How many times was it ever called again?
Once. Hmm. One time that matters. That's all I got to say about that. Mm-hmm.
All right. So we got... I'm just kind of going through non-criminal things real quick on his timeline, and then we're going to get into... I just got a couple more, and I think it's worth noting on August 27, 2012 is when Hernandez signed his new $40 million contract over 5 years. So that was...
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. That was when... And
insane.
I was... It's kind of surprising. I was shocked that they paid him before Gronk.
Right.
Did that shock you guys at all?
At the time, no. Because he was...
His versatility.
Gronk was cool, but like Aaron, he had the... Like you said, the versatility, you know? He was very quick. He was athletic. You could use him in many different positions. So I figured they were going to pay him first, and then probably Gronk would go next, I guess.
Well, I know they were running a stat with him, with Hernandez in versus him not being in the game. And it was something like he had Tom Brady had like Peyton Manning numbers when Hernandez was in. But any game he sat out, he had like Carson Palmer numbers.
It was horrifying. But I will say Gronkowski's numbers were like insanely superior to Hernandez. But let's take a quick look at Hernandez's numbers over his 3 years with the team, which when I was like, oh, 3 years, that was it.
He felt a lot like longer. Right. Yeah. He made a big impact, you know, like in a little bit of time that he was there, I guess, but like it felt longer.
So that first rookie season of 2010, we're looking at 45 receptions for 563 yards and 6 TDs. And then, like you said, the versatility, 3 rushes, 47 yards. But he was also used on other stuff too, right? I feel like, wasn't he used on
special teams. I think at one point they actually had him as either kick returner or punt returner.
As Daddy Bass deep throws the mic.
yes, he did.
So, yeah, the versatility. Then you have 2011, which was his best season. 79 receptions, 910 yards, 7 touchdowns.
Killer season.
But what I'm trying to say is, like, in comparison, I believe Gronkowski set the record for yards and touchdowns for a tight end that year. I believe he had 17 touchdowns. He led all receivers.
And that's a scary thing. Just think about the stats the two of them could have put up for a long period of time.
So why do you think that he got the bigger contract first?
There's some stuff he does that
versatility.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's stuff he does
the stat
that wasn't
sheet
in
can't
the
explain everything. But
can I ask how that compares to other like tight ends at that time?
No, they were very dominant.
His host, yeah.
Yeah, that was
they were
one
very
of the
dire
higher,
at the time.
One of the higher contracts given to tight ends at the time, for sure. Hmm. But that was their thing.
Who's gotten paid more than that since then?
A lot of people.
Yeah, well, it was a while back, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brad Gronk, Ebron.
Ebron? No.
Didn't he just get a big contract?
But he just had a good year, finally.
Finally, yeah.
Because he was a first round pick, but he was like
a disappointment,
bust kind of. Yeah. But dude, he's been going off. Why did they just give him a new contract right recently?
I believe so.
I thought he was on like a prove it deal with Indianapolis.
Yeah,
but I could be wrong. Either way, he was like a touchdown machine this year. It was crazy. And all right, so that was the monster year. Then 2012, I believe he was banged up this year. I'm, 10 games. 10 games started, 51 receptions, 483 yards, 5 touchdowns. However, if you look at the playoff numbers, they're still pretty good, though. He had 23 catches that year and, 15 receptions for 168 yards. So, yeah, overall, it's kind of shocking, all of it. I don't know. He could have just been, just would have really been interesting to see what would have come in the future, you know?
Yeah. And even the numbers is shocking when you find out some of the stuff he was doing off the field as well. The fact that he was able to get in there. I mean, I'm sure there was probably a lot of times when he was leaving the stadium and he wasn't doing the extra work, or he was partying until 4 o'clock in the morning on a game day and he was still able to produce game day. So I think it was pretty impressive.
Like that thing you were saying about how he like got stoned before playing is insane to me. Like sometimes I get more focused if I'm stoned or whatever, but I would not be able to like catch a ball better.
Yeah, well, some people would, and for him, it was a big part of it all for him, because he would say, like, okay, if I didn't get high, it would take me like 2 or 3 days to recover from a game. If I did get high, there was like no recovery window. Like, he was a firm believer that marijuana had like physical effects on him that helped.
I helped with the pain.
Like Rob Van Dam, right?
Like Rob Van Dam, dude. RVD, brother.
Jaws, man.
But it's funny you said, what did you just say right before?
Like the game where he allegedly got pulled over at like 4 o'clock in the morning with his buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
He was during a playoff game.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, you know who he kind of reminds me of in that respect is Lawrence Taylor.
I was going to say that. I was waiting to say that.
Because me and Brian, I know you read the autobiography, yeah. Over the Edge, LT. If anybody hasn't read that, it's an unbelievable book.
Like, it's literally unbelievable, like the crazy shit this motherfucker was doing.
Yeah, I remember, it was like a hurricane that knocked out everything, and it was like, oh, it's the day to read. And then I lent you that book, and you're like, oh, this book's fucking crazy. This guy would drink like pitchers of kamikazes like when he was out partying. He didn't work out too. That's another thing people don't realize about LT.
He never worked out.
He
did the weight room.
He was a natural. Everything he did, it was just from him existing.
I want my head to go on his body.
He would get heated. he would get heated. People would, like, other teams would send like girls to go like try to fuck him and shit just so that he can be tired the next day and shit.
Yeah. they would send like 2-3 girls to his room. He'd fuck them all night, and then he'd still go out and crush the quarterbacks.
Like, the book is so good. I told Aaron, I was like, dude, this is like one of my favorite books. And so I became like a huge fan, and I just admired it. Dude. I was like, oh my God, how can he do this shit? Superhuman.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the great part of the book is like you read the intro chapter, and he's buying coke from these two shady dudes at like fucking 2 a.m. in New York, right? And he's got the money and shit, but he's got like Rolex and he's in the nice car and shit. And he's like, yo, brother, you know, like, I just need some of the coke or whatever. And they're like, yo, that's LT. Yo, that's LT. And then they're like, yo, let's rob this motherfucker. And like, so one dude gets into the front seat, puts the fucking gun to his head. And then the guy getting into the back seat, before he can get in, he floors it. He's just flying down the street, jerking the wheel, punching the shit out of the dude that had the gun to his head, just beating him to a fucking pulp, dude. Fucking pummels the dude, pulls over, dumps his body out, and then he's like, I'm Lawrence Taylor. I'm no Superman. Like, this, like, this is the most gangster shit, dude.
Dude, the book is so good.
Yeah, and there's tons more moments in that throughout the book. And I remember when he came back to Giant Stadium, for like to be inducted to the Ring of Honor and stuff. Phil Simms was there, and they had always had like a tumultuous relationship. And so Simms is like, I just want to throw my last pass to LT. And he's like, fuck, I'm high on crack right now. Like, he's just like all cracked out and shit. And he's like, yo, just don't drop the ball. Like, don't drop the ball. And he's wearing sandals too. And so he's like jogging out in the sandals, but he caught it. Yo, he caught it. But yeah, check out LT Over the Edge. Unbelievable book. I get fucking amped up just remembering
it's
reading
worth
it.
The read. Trust me, it's not super big book, but it's entertaining as fuck, dude.
Yeah, he's crazy, and I think Aaron Hernandez had a little bit of that in him, you know.
Yeah, he has a little bit of that LT in him. Yeah. That's for sure.
So it always makes for an interesting player, but as you know, these are controversial figures. They do crazy shit off the field. And I feel like once they leave that adrenaline junkie kind of thing, you know, like what replaces that, you know? It can't be anything good, I guess. But, all right, so now getting into some of the more disturbing details, I guess, of the Hernandez stuff. July 16th, 2012, Daniel De Abreu and Saphiro Furtado, am I saying that right?
I think it's, Saphiro Furtado.
Okay. Are killed by gunshots fired into their vehicle in Boston South End after leaving the Cure nightclub. Hernandez was later indicted for these murders, but acquitted at trial on April 2017. And I think before we kind of open up this discussion about this, I want to read one other thing, is that on February 13th of 2013, after leaving a strip club in Miami, Hernandez allegedly shot friend and drug dealer Alexander Bradley in the forehead and dumped him in an industrial park off I-95 near Rivera over Bradley's knowledge of the 2012 homicides, which Hernandez would later be indicted in May of 2015 on the witness intimidation charges in the Bradley shooting. So I pair those two together. I think like they go well together in the discussion, mainly because Bradley was there for the homicides in Boston, you know. So it's all kind of interconnected in a way. So let's open it up. What do you guys know about this?
I just want to point something out right off the rip that I think is really fucked up.
Yep.
I think being at the strip club the day before Valentine's Day is just rude.
but it's the day before Valentine's. It would be ruder if it was on Valentine's.
That's true.
If it's Did they leave before midnight? Go together.
Oh, I respect that.
Sticky Mickeys.
Oof.
Holla.
Oof.
Yeah, as for the murder of the Daniel De Abreu and Saphiro Furtado, I mean, initially, when that murder took place, I really didn't know much about it. It wasn't really until after the fact of, you know, Hernandez being linked to it that that I found out about it. As for Alexander Bradley being shot, I mean, that was something that I heard about, you know, relatively, you know, right away, because I knew that he was shot. He was an acquaintance of Hernandez, and then shortly after that is when he was. He didn't want to go to the police. He didn't want to say who shot him. But at that same point, he's filing a civil suit against Aaron Hernandez to try to collect some money for the fact that he lost his eye.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting, the fact that you wouldn't press charges against somebody, but you're trying to make... And it wasn't even like crazy amounts of money he was trying to make. Wasn't it like $15,000 or something like that?
Well, he said he wanted $5 million from him.
Initially, that was through text messages and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and then Hernandez countered with $1.5 million, and then Bradley countered with $2.5 million, and then he just stopped communicating about numbers with him, I guess.
Yeah.
But looking at the double homicide, right? So that started, there was actually five Cape Verdean dudes. I believe it was, well, as we said, Abreu, Furtado, right? And let me look here.
You think if he was on Wheel of Fortune and he was like, can I buy an eye?
Oh, that's not nice.
It would have cost him $15,000.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, so, okay, the other guys were Gerson Lopes, Ray Childs Gomes Sanchez, and Aquilino Freire? I'm probably not saying that right, but so they all met up. They would end up entering the Cure Lounge in Boston late in the evening of July 15th as Aaron Hernandez and his then best friend Alexander Bradley were brought past the line into the club. When they would leave, they would get back into the BMW. Abreu would be the driver. Furtado would be riding shotgun, and the other three are in the back. These other two guys that work security for another club downtown there, Donald Gobbin and Brian Quone, were behind them driving home. They witness a dark-skinned male driver in a silver 4Runner gun it. I guess the 4Runner was, like, near them, and, like, they were kind of making eye contact, and they got uncomfortable, so they braked a little to let him go. And then they witnessed the 4Runner gun it through the red light and pull up to the VMW. And this is when they say they heard from the car, "What's up now, niggas?" And five shots got let off into the BMW. So at this point, Lopes rolls out of the back. He's unscathed. Sanchez has blood all over his shirt, but his legs are fine. And Abreu is gasping for his last breaths, and Furtado has been shot in the face, is covered in blood. There's a hole above his right eye. Lopes and Sanchez bounce. They just start running. I guess, I don't know if it was Lopes or Sanchez, but one of them was trying to, like, hail a cab for hours. But he's like, it's tough to get a cab when you're a black man covered in blood at, like, 3 in the morning or something.
That's what Uber is for.
Goldman says he that he wasn't sure if the people had guns that were in the car. So, like, he fucking, like, drove around the corner and called 911 and shit. So you had the, you know, the one wounded guy and the two dying guys on the scene. And in Jose Baez's book, obviously, Jose biased, right? Because he's the defense attorney for Aaron Hernandez. So it's going to be a little bit skewed. And you can tell, like, in the book, he's kind of, like, really close with Aaron and stuff. But he does make some interesting observations on the crime scene. One thing being that there was actually in the police report, it noted that a fucking street sweeper came and sweeped the street before they were able to secure the crime scene. And he's like, I've never fucking heard of that before.
Right.
You know, and he knew something was up because there were so many cops writing reports. Like, everybody who was involved with it wrote a report. And, like, he's like, that's weird. It usually means they're trying to not say something, more or less, and that's why everyone's putting a report. But yeah, so that he's like, yo, if they had a gun and shot off shells, who knows if those shells, you know, if it was a gunfight, which when one of these dudes arrived at the hospital, they used the term, he said, I had just been in a gunfight, you know, which implies fire back and forth, right? But there was never anything to implicate that. You had two guys take off from the scene. Maybe they dumped their guns, you know what I'm saying? I don't think that there was any bullet holes found in the 4Runner, but who knows? You know, like, it's still a possibility. One of the more crazy things that I learned, though, about this, and I don't think many people know this, is that the two guys that were dead in the car, they put sheets over them, right? Which kind of contaminated the crime scene. And before they photographed him, they towed them with the dead bodies in the car to a forensic bay, unloaded it, and took pictures in the forensic bay.
Yeah, that's some pretty shoddy police work.
Defeats it.
They towed him dead in the car, dude.
That's insane.
Baez is like, can you imagine driving to work at the, like, 5 a.m. in the morning? You just got up, and there's a tow truck with two fucking dead guys riddled with bullets right next to you. He's like, I can't even believe this shit. Like, so, you know,
if that was your family members and you found out, like, seriously, they couldn't even call the medical examiner and get the medical examiner there. They, you know, not only are they doing shoddy detective work, which is going to cause an issue, you know, when we bring somebody to court, but just, it seems like just lack of respect for those bodies. You know?
Well, I think they did pronounce them dead on the scene, though, from what I understand. I think they did pronounce them dead. But then there was this whole thing where they were like, oh, well, why didn't you remove the bodies from the car? And they were like, they came up with a bullshit excuse. They were like, oh, we needed a search warrant to do that. And we didn't have the search warrant.
To remove the dead body?
And then, well, to enter the car without permission. And he's like, well, there's other circumstances that let you enter a car. Like when it's riddled full of fucking bullets with corpses.
Probable cause, right?
Yeah.
There's dead bodies.
So they tried to play that card and they were like, oh, yeah, we never entered the car. But then he found fucking a photograph online that showed the crime scene tape wedged in between the back seat. You know what I mean? So, like, there was just all this fucking terrible police work that destroyed evidence, and a lot of it just can't be trusted. What do you know about the shooting? Is there any other details that you came across?
No, not really. I mean, other than what the prosecution said, you know, what the motive was. And to me, it just seemed a little shady. You know,
oh, yeah, the motive. This is a great one. The spilled drink.
It was all over a spilled drink or something like that. And so Aaron Hernandez felt like he was, you know, he's being wronged or whatnot by the fact that somebody would spill the drink on him. And then I think there was Alexander Bradley, who was supposedly egging him on, you know, saying these guys are, you know, trying to fuck with you or something like that. And I don't know. I have a hard time finding that. That would be a motive, but, you know, you never know. I mean, obviously,
I've seen things escalate. Like, I don't trust clubs like that. Like, have you guys, when you go to clubs, have you seen people get upset over that, over a spilled drink?
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I grew up with my brother, and, you know, any guy, you know, you just never know when the guy's going to go off his hinges. So, yeah, anything's possible.
Well, I think what was concerning, though, about this was that the police didn't interrogate not one person that was in the club that night. So they got no one to corroborate the story. There was this whole shady shit that went on with the footage from inside the club where they were in league with the club owner. This guy gave them footage for a lot of different shit that would happen around there.
He was previously a detective or something like that for the Boston Police Department.
Well, the head of security was, but the club owner, he was just kind of like, you know, interwoven with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and something like there's like 12 camera systems, but for some reason they were only able to get footage from 8 of the cameras. So,
and they were external.
Whether,
I would doubt if anyone that was at a club, if their testimony would be like valuable on a witness stand anyways, or by police too. Like, I mean, in some circumstances, yes, but I think there's a lot of reasonable doubt you can cast on anyone that is just in a club situation, no matter what, regardless of their state of mind.
Right.
Yeah, but you can't just not ask anybody.
At least, yeah. No, I mean, not, I
there's
know.
Also, there's, yeah, like, I mean, you could say that about anybody, that they could, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
I mean, it's easy to ask an unbiased witness, did you see a problem between that group of Cape Verdean guys and Aaron Hernandez? Pretty recognizable fucking guy, considering when he walked in the club, somebody approached him immediately and asked him for a picture.
Yeah.
Well, which they didn't interview him either.
Yeah.
The guy who, it was his birthday, asked, at first he said, can I take a picture with you, Aaron? He says, no. He says, dude, it's my birthday, please. He's like, all right, come in the back room. We'll take it back there. I don't want everybody in this fucking place asking for a picture from me. If they would have looked at the picture, they could have said, oh, did he spill a drink on him? Is there a spilled drink on his shirt in the photo? All these things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They did none of that.
Yeah.
Because they knew, because they knew what was happening inside. Right. That's what it makes me feel like.
Right.
They knew what happened. They knew the story was bullshit. And the more people they asked about a spilled drink, the more it would debunk it, right?
Well, that's the thing. It's like the police did such shoddy detective work. And then the second that they found out Hernandez was linked with the Odin Lloyd murder, and they knew that Aaron Hernandez was at the club, at that point they just pretty much cast the fact that he was guilty and they were going to come up with any story possible just to kind of cover their ass the fact that they did shoddy detective work in the first place.
Exactly. But you know what the crazy part was? Is he was involved in the murder, right? That's how I feel anyway.
Yeah, I definitely think he was involved. Me personally, I don't think he committed the murder, but
right, me neither.
He was involved.
So he was involved, but the motive that they conjured, it's because it seems like Alexander Bradley, his friend that was there with him, was the one that committed the murder.
Right.
But they were taking his testimony as gold, when really it was not. Shit. He's, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and even if what Alexander Bradley was saying was truthful, I mean, the fact that it's easy to poke holes in his story because of, you know, his lack of credibility, his criminal past, obviously he had a vendetta, you know, he had a dog in the fight with trying to screw Hernandez over with the fact that, you know, he said Hernandez shot him in the face. you know, none of that stuff would really hold up in court. So it was kind of interesting the fact that the prosecution would really lean heavily on his testimony and not really trying to find other avenues to maybe try to get both of them.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird, right?
Yeah.
I find that part really fucking weird because he's a known drug dealer in Hartford, Connecticut, right?
Right.
And then he was like the bully of Bristol, right? This is a guy that was nicknamed, I believe it's Sharif, is what his middle name or his nickname was?
His nickname was Sharif.
And they called him Sharif the Shooter because he was known for fucking letting guns off.
He had illegal weapons that they found. You know, yeah. It's like everything would fit this story that they would try to pin the murder on him. For some reason, they were just so fixated with trying to get it on Hernandez.
Right. I don't know why.
Was this before or after Bob Kraft kind of sold Aaron Hernandez out?
This is before. Okay. None of this stuff was known for like a while. And Hernandez wasn't suspected in any of this shit for like years.
Trying to look for conspiracy loopholes. That's all.
Yeah. And I think just to give you an idea about Alexander Bradley, right? Nicknamed Sharif the Shooter. This is a guy who went up to a fucking house in Bristol that he had an issue with somebody at. And him and his boy just unloaded fucking guns. He was known for just unloading guns into fucking houses of people that he had beef with. And the police, in the report that Baez cites, he says the police called him and asked him if he was involved in it. When somebody shoots up a fucking house, dude, you go there. You know what I mean? Like, you go there, you kick the fucking door in, right? You cuff them up and you bring them down and you really fucking, you know, you interrogate them, dude. You don't just call them up on the phone and say, hey, just you know curious, anything about yeah. this? So that's a little suspicious, too. But that's how unsavory this guy was. That was his nickname. And going now to the incident where he was shot in the face, who he claims it was Hernandez that shot him in the face, right? So he was down in Florida, right? And it was him and a couple of players from the Baltimore Ravens. Hernandez said he felt comfortable around Alexander Bradley because he had his own money. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't, like, using him, so to speak. And so he convinced him to come down on this trip with him. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I got some guys down there that might be able to get involved, get you some drug action, so to speak, right? Like, he was going to put him in league with some different connected people. And how does this – can you tell the story from – his perspective, Alexander Bradley?
So I think his story was the fact that Hernandez was going to get him in connection with some people down there who was going to be able to get him some drug connections. And so Hernandez basically set the arrangement up. I think they met at a strip club, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they met at a strip club, and I guess...
Tootsie's, I believe, is the name of the strip club.
Tootsie's.
That may have been there. So I believe things went south. And then it was basically a kind of like a drug deal or something gone wrong, right?
Right. So like Bradley's story is that his cell phone, that the beef was essentially over a phone. Like when they were at the strip club, they got into an argument over a $10,000 tab. He said that Hernandez said, yo, we're going to split this shit. And then he was like, yo, all your boys are here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to fucking split this shit. Like we should be, you should have told me this in advance. And then he's like, he asks one of the strippers to bring him an iPhone charger, but it was an older version of the charger. So then he gave his phone to her, and she said she'd charge it at the bar for him. He claims that he never got his phone back, and that on the ride home, he was in the back seat of the SUV. Hernandez was in the front passenger, and one of the other guys was driving. And he was like, can you guys turn around? I want to go back and get my phone. I forgot it. And Hernandez is like, don't turn around. I'll buy you a new phone. And then he's like, I don't want to buy a new phone. I got pictures of my kids, all this shit, right? And so they get into an argument over that. But eventually, Bradley claims that he just fell asleep. And he was like, they stopped arguing. He fell asleep. When he woke up, there was a gun in his face, who he says was Aaron Hernandez, shot him in the face, and they dumped him out the car. There's a couple problems with this. apparently because around, I guess around the time when this was happening, Aaron Hernandez's cell phone was logged in, like, back at his hotel. Like, he was making calls and texting and shit like that. So the timeline doesn't match up with the cell records. And also, the blood splatter pattern on his hat, it was like a close range trajectory. And I guess they said where he would have fallen, there was no physical space to fit a car. Further corroborating the story is the strip club manager and the stripper. They said that they gave him the phone back. They testified that they gave him the phone back on record.
Yeah, it kind of seems odd, though, if there was somewhat of negotiations with Hernandez and Bradley over how much money they were going to, you know, how much money Aaron Hernandez was going to pay him if Hernandez wasn't the one that was shooting.
Right. But that could have been a complete fabrication, too. Like the whole bill thing, that could have just been something that Bradley conjured up. Because the phone thing certainly was, because they say that he gave the phone back.
Right.
So, what do you call it? Yeah, it just seems, I don't know, either way, it seems like a weird thing. But the theory that Hernandez had was that he basically went and did a drug deal and got jacked. And that's, he got shot in the face. And he was pissed off at Hernandez for setting him up with these unsavory dudes because he had vouched for him, you know? So that's pretty much that crime. So it just depends how you look at it. I mean, is Bradley a complete liar? We know he's definitely nuts. We know that later on, in I think it was like 2014, he would be shot three times again outside of another bar, go back to his car, including he got shot in the groin, go back to his car, pull a gun out, and dump it and unload it into a club full of people. And I think he only got like four years or something for that, which is also crazy. Bizarre.
Yeah, crazy he'd only get 4 years. Crazy he's got like 9 lives, so it's...
That's what it seems like, right? Yeah. All right, but let's move on and kind of bring it full circle. What do you got about the Odin Lloyd? I'm going to let you jump on the Odin Lloyd shit. Because that's really where all this stuff was covered in dirt, right? For years, or almost years, right?
Yeah, it was 2 years, close to 2 years from the time that the murder took place, from the time that he was indicted in the double murder. Yeah, so Odin Lloyd. So Odin Lloyd was the boyfriend of Aaron Hernandez's sister-in-law. So there was...
And her name is...
Shania and Shania. So he was... Aaron Hernandez's girlfriend was Shania. And her sister is Shania. Shania is Shania, yeah. And she was dating Odin Lloyd. Odin Lloyd, he was a professional... He was a... he was a aspiring football player, and unfortunately, semi-pro. He was never able to make it. So he was doing like semi-pro football. Boston Bandits. Eventually, you know, through the relationship of the two sisters, Aaron Hernandez and Odin started hanging around. I know, you know, they went to, you know, several different nightclubs. They, you know, as you can hear from the trial and through the media, they were, you know, good marijuana smoking buddies. You know, you'll hear, you know, that reference many times throughout the trial. Supposedly Odin Lloyd was a really good blunt roller. It's funny. they mentioned that a few times, but, yeah, so they were, you know, they became friends. I know Odin Lloyd, he was, you know, he was starting to brag with the fact that I think there was like a rented Suburban that he was driving around for a little bit. He was kind of boasting and bragging to different people. And then a few different times they go to different clubs. And at one point, at least from the prosecution standpoint, you know, Aaron Hernandez kind of gets taken back with the fact that they're at a club and Odin Lloyd is talking to a few different people. And so he kind of felt like disrespected, or maybe the fact that Odin Lloyd might be telling some of his business to other people. There was also another time where I guess Odin Lloyd and Shania walked in the house. Odin Lloyd never said to Aaron Hernandez's house. He never said hi to Aaron Hernandez. And then Aaron Hernandez made a reference to his buddy, like, hey, that's kind of rude. You know, he doesn't even say hi to me. So he was kind of taken back. And so that's kind of the narrative that the prosecution, you know, puts, is the fact that, you know, Aaron Hernandez started getting like put off with the fact that he felt like he was being disrespected from Odin Lloyd.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, do you think it's disrespectful if you don't say hello to someone whose house it is?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I think so. Obviously, it depends on the relationship. I don't know too much about their relationship. But, you know, if I all of a sudden I just, you know, I show up here and I don't even say hi to you. And it's like, what the hell are you doing here? You know, you're in my house.
It's really weird. Yeah. That'd be a weird thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some living environments I've been in are different, I guess, where it's just like, oh, you have a roommate and they have their people. You have your people. So you might not say hi to every one of them. But this is like a couple. Right, so it's right. Kind of different.
Yeah,
I feel like if you go into a couple's house, you say hi to them, both of them. But I don't know.
Yeah, so that was definitely kind of the narrative that the prosecution.
Do you feel the motive was kind of weak on this?
I do, only because I find it hard to believe that somebody would get that pissed off that they're going to murder somebody because of the fact that they felt like they were being disrespected by somebody. But obviously, if he told certain things to Odin Lloyd, maybe that shouldn't have been out there, such as the double murder, and then all of a sudden he started getting paranoia, thinking that Odin Lloyd was telling people about the double murder. Maybe he's trying to cover his ass and he was going to kill Odin Lloyd. That's really the only
thing. Just because they don't know the motive doesn't mean, you know what I mean? They could have been pegging the wrong motive, but
right. The jury wants to know the motive, right? And like, that's obviously you want to make a compelling case to the jury, but with the motive, but yeah, I mean, that could absolutely be wrong. It could be something completely different. Maybe there was other information that he knew. That Odin Lloyd knew other information that Aaron Hernandez was concerned about.
Do you guys think, so it doesn't seem like marijuana makes him paranoid, right? Based off of his previous experience and his
CTE.
Incredible. Yeah, it was CTE, but they were also saying he was doing PCP and angel dust as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, definitely the guys he was hanging around with were. So it's worth mentioning that, there's a guy named Hobo.
Yeah,
Ernest
Wallace. Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz.
So these are the two guys. They were a couple of dusties. I mean, you could just take a look at them.
And PCP and angel dust do not show up on drug tests, right? Like, they're not typically... I don't even know what angel dust is, to be honest.
Well, it's funny. We have our resident expert in here.
Do you know what angel dust is?
I thought it was just cocaine.
That's it?
No. No. Angel dust will make you like hallucinate.
Yeah,
and shit.
Hallucinogens, really? Stuff
like that. Yeah, people usually sprinkle
Where
it
do
on
you get
blunts.
It? I'm just kidding.
People will sprinkle it on blunts. You could call them like oolies and shit back in the day. That's why, like, if you put, you know, people would lace blunts with that shit. And that's why, you know, if you're hitting
but
a blunt at a party.
Right?
It can, absolutely. Yeah. It can make you do crazy things. But yeah, so these two guys, they were super dusties. Hobo was kind of his replacement for Bradley.
Bradley, yeah.
So he had the beef with Bradley. They're exchanging texts back and forth, threatening each other, right? And he's trying to extort him for money based on this situation that's happened. So he's enlisted Hobo and...
Carlos Ortiz, yeah.
And he's set up the intricate security system in his house, right? That's filming everything because he's paranoid that... Right. And he actually... Oh, you guys might find this pretty interesting. He had a meeting with Bill Belichick about this, telling him that he didn't feel safe being living in Connecticut anymore and that he wanted to be traded, basically, is what he was telling him. Because there was someone that was threatening him and his family. So he was wanting to be traded to like fucking California or something, you know? And Bill was like, bro, I just put this fucking tight end tandem together. We just gave you a contract. We're not fucking trading you. And like Ortiz was like acting like Bill Belichick and the Patriots were the bad guys for this. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, not Ortiz, Jose Baez. Like, he was like, oh, acting like you guys, like your team was the bad guys for this? And I'm like, dude, what do you fucking expect?
It's a job.
Yeah.
Wasn't that supposedly the Bill Belichick was the one that told him to get the flop house in Franklin?
Yeah, I think.
The rumor I heard.
I think he, yeah, that's rumor.
And that's the funny thing is, like, he gets this elaborate camera system outside of his house in North Attleboro, but then he's got, like, this shady condo in Franklin that has absolutely zero security.
Yeah.
So, kind of interesting. But, yeah, I did hear that story with, you know, he flew out to the, I believe it was during the draft combine.
Yeah.
And
he flew out to see Belichick, wherever he was. I think he was, like, somewhere weird.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't New England.
Yeah, so at that point, he definitely, you know, he was using Hobo as kind of his replacement for Alexander Bradley, you know, someone he felt like he was secure around, but then at the same point, it was also allowing him to get access to some of the drugs and get access into some of the trouble that he, you know, obviously seemed like he had a lust for as well.
Yep. And so what? Oh, yeah. Okay, so if we do that night, right, he got picked up.
Yeah, so it was the night of June 17th, 2013, and there was a few different things that took place. So first, Aaron Hernandez was out. I believe it was with he was actually out with his fiance and stuff. They were actually out in Providence, Rhode Island, and I think he was sending some text messages. He was tired of being with his girl, and he was messaging Ernest or Hobo and Ortiz that he wanted to hang out. And then at some point, he gets pissed off up with Odin Lloyd. He starts messaging Odin Lloyd saying, you know, hey, let's hook up tonight. And then he's messaging Hobo and Ortiz saying, you know, get your ass down here. We want to go down. We want to, you know, kind of settle this. And then at the same point, he's texting Odin Lloyd. So you can see, obviously, from the prosecution standpoint, where it looks like Hernandez orchestrating the hit on getting Odin Lloyd in the car and then obviously probably doing something bad.
And the crazy thing about this is none of these texts were admitted into evidence. They were able, the defense was able to keep these suppressed.
Right, right. And then, yeah, so it eventually, I believe, the guys ended up getting there later than what originally he wanted them to. So he kept sending them text messages, get your ass down here, get your ass down here. He was telling Odin Lloyd, hey, we're going to do the same thing we did the other night. I guess try to allege that they were going to be pretty much just hanging out. They end up showing up at Odin Lloyd's house. I believe it was in Dorchester.
Let's see.
I think it was Dorchester, Brockton, or something like that. One of those.
Maybe Brockton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure to be honest, but yeah. So he went to his house. Yeah, sorry, I don't got that one.
No problem. So they end up showing up at his house. I think they make a few stops along the way. I think they stop at a gas station. Get some bubble gum.
Blue Bubblicious.
Blue Bubblicious.
He's also at the gas pump, like throwing his arms up and shit, like just like feeling it, you know? Yeah. Like this video of him is really strange.
Yeah, it was really strange.
he's just like, I think out it was, like, yo.
Yeah, that Bubblicious do it to you every time.
There was like a weird thing, too, right? Like, they didn't even have enough money to buy the Bubblicious gum or something like that, what? I think. Yeah.
For real?
It was like, yeah, some weird thing I heard.
What song do you think they were listening to? Do you think it was like
My
like
lumps, my lumps, my lolly lady lumps. Remember that one? That's my guess.
Fergie?
Yeah. It's probably some sort of gangster rap or some shit, I can imagine.
Tupac.
So they end up picking up Odin Lloyd. They end up bringing him to an industrial park, which is probably less than a mile from Aaron Hernandez's house.
And I'm going to just key in on this real quick too, because the text at the very end, I think the last text that he sent was like to his sister.
Yeah, right? So Odin Lloyd sent these text messages to his sister. Obviously, it seems like he's concerned at this point, and he wants his sister to know who he's with.
Yeah, and then he texts her NFL, and then the last text he sends is it says just so you know, like just so you know, I'm with NFL, like. If some shit happens, is what it makes it sound like.
Yeah,
I think you need to explain the timeline of the text messages. Like,
well, why don't you? It sounds like you.
Okay, so I don't have this in front of me, but like, what? This was like 3 o'clock in the morning, like maybe 3:17 that he's sending this. He had texted his sister earlier in the night, and she didn't answer. Like, whatever, she's probably sleeping or something or doing something else.
Well, no, yeah, the text was at like. She was like, oh, my phone was dead at like 3:19 a.m.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. he texted before that, and then yeah. he texted her again, like, you know, why aren't you answering me?
Yeah. And so then he says NFL, just so you know, and it's, that was the last text at what, 3:20?
Yeah, it was like 3:22.
It was just a few minutes before
3:23.
People near the industrial park heard the gunshots.
Right. So when you guys get a text message that says, "This is who I'm with," just so you know, right? What, like, how would you interpret that? Like, because they didn't allow her testimony about that.
He fears his life's in danger.
Something doesn't feel right.
If you get something that says, "Just so you know."
Yeah.
Like, "This is who I'm with, just so you know."
That's really weird.
I would interpret that as being like, "Just so you know, in case. Just in case." That's how I
interpret it. It's fucked up that, to me, it's fucked up that they scrubbed that from the trial. Like, he got convicted anyway, but they didn't allow those texts in. And why, for whatever reason, you would not allow the last thing a man says before he dies to be at the fucking... That's him speaking.
Right.
Right? That's the victim speaking their last words, essentially. And you have fucking suffocated them.
You've silenced them, yeah.
Yeah. That's fuck. I don't know what these judges are fucking thinking sometimes, dude. But I think it's important because now, like, you're lining up the part where the three are bringing Lloyd to the construction site. So I think we should just talk about this real quick, that many people don't know that Aaron Hernandez was tried on what is known as the joint venture theory. And it's a legal loophole that allows prosecutors to hold someone liable for murder even if they don't know the person who did the actual killing. That's right. A person can be convicted of murder even if the prosecutor can't prove that they did it. So in this scenario, you have three guys, right, that we know went into this Odin. Odin died there, never came out, right? And then there's no way, dude, that anybody knows except for those guys that were in there. So that's where the joint venture theory comes in.
Right. Yeah, and then, so after the shooting took place, then they went back to Aaron Hernandez's house. And so they got the footage from the camera system of Hobo, Carlos, and Hernandez walking into the house. But there's no Odin Lloyd. But they know that the fact that, obviously, Odin Lloyd was with them. So, obviously, you know, it's pretty easy to make that determination that, you know, the three of them dropped him off, you know, in the industrial park. They shot him. And then it was even Carlos Ortiz's towel that was left at the scene of the murder as well. And so it was rumored that, I guess, Carlos Ortiz, typically when he's taking angel dust or whatnot, he always typically keeps a sweat towel with him. And it was that same sweat towel that was left at the crime scene.
Mike, is that true? You usually have to use a sweat towel?
You're the expert. You're the one that corrected me. So does it make you sweat generally?
I'm sweating now. Yeah. Which those two would end up getting, I think, something like 4.5 to 7 years, right?
Yeah, 4.5 to 7 years. I think a lot of it was based on the fact that they were squealing and talking.
Yeah. And we see in the video when Aaron Hernandez gets back, he's holding a gun, right?
Or a remote control.
Yeah, depending on who you ask. But there was a person from Glock that confirmed that it was a Glock. But then they asked him, can you really say that with certainty? And he's like, no.
Do you guys feel like any part of the trial was just an extension of, like, advertising? Because they kept having people that are like, I work at Nike. I'm a Nike expert. I work at the Glock. Shoes. I'm a Glock expert. The
2003 Air Jordans, right? Found next to the tire tread, which he was seen on the video in the convenience store buying the bubblegum wearing those shoes. So they had the Nike witness there, and he said, yes, those are the shoes.
Yeah.
My friend at work bids on Nikes constantly, and I keep looking up the Heaven's Gate ones, and they're like $1,100, but I haven't looked up the Aaron Hernandez ones, so I wonder how much they run for.
Yeah. You're probably up there.
Yeah.
You know? How much does a jersey run? You know, that little redaction costs them, I think, like
a couple hundred. The Patriots, right?
Like $250,000, I think, to take care of his jersey issues.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, the Patriots did the jersey buyback.
Yeah.
Wait, so they don't sell his jersey anymore?
No.
Yes, dude. I mean, you get custom-made. Call them in China.
There's lots of her names.
NFL.com wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You tried it, Mike?
No, somebody else tried
Mike,
it.
When you the tried anniversary it? Was oh, somebody up, else. Yeah.
And somebody else. It. They wouldn't make it. They wouldn't make an 81 Hernandez.
Yeah. Somebody else. Huh?
Somebody else. Not me.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, and then there's a few interesting things kind of after the fact. I think that the following day, like, you know, Hernandez and then I think they slept, what was it, pretty much like all day long or something like that. I mean, it's kind of weird that someone who just committed a murder would be able to consciously sleep or whatnot, but...
Hashtag drugs.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. But obviously, the police got on it right away. You know, they found the body first thing in the morning. I think it was a jogger or somebody who found it in the industrial park.
Obviously, that's why I don't jog.
Yeah. Obviously, it got tons of media coverage. So at that point, you know, you had the media pretty much stocked outside of his house. You had them, you know, they were outside of Gillette Stadium. Pretty much everywhere he was going, you know, they had helicopters that were pretty much following him. At one point, he goes to Gillette Stadium. Yeah, you know, he has a few words in the facility, and at that point, they tell him they think it's best that he leaves the facility. He heads to Boston. He stays overnight with his defense team. Gets to come back home, and it wasn't until 9 days from the time that Odin Lloyd was murdered until the point where he was arrested and indicted. And I think that's the memorable scene that obviously everybody knows about with, you know, his shirt being over him and, you know, he's handcuffed behind the back and pretty shocking photos, I think, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys feel like his arrest in general affected the Patriots as a whole? Like, yeah. I'm not talking about, like, him and his impact on the team, but, like, the organization of the Patriots. Like, well, yeah, I feel like they handled
quarter
it.
Quarter million.
I mean, he cost them money.
I think
but that's
I mean,
it.
That like, happens
I feel
like with injuries and stuff like that. I mean, you pay people, they get injured, they don't play. I mean, it just seems like they're always dealing with shit in the media. It seems like they do probably one of the better jobs out of all organizations of deflecting things and kind of tuning out some of the noise. I mean, it definitely hurt, but I just think they've been able to weather a lot of storms.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I think
minimal
to
impact.
to kind of wrap things up here soon. I think we have the bullet and the bubble gum. That's probably one other thing that people could point to where they were stuck together, right? And fucked up the DNA evidence.
Yeah, that one was pretty interesting. So, just a lot of things that Hernandez was doing was a little kind of interesting and shady. But, you know, he was renting cars, so it's not like he had his own car. It was a rental car that he used to pick up Lloyd and that he, you know, the murder was, you know, was involved in the murder. And so I believe it was like the following day he went to drop off the car at the rental car place. And they were cleaning it out, and sure enough, there was the shell casing, and the shell casing had the bubble gum to it. And so... you know, when the police were doing, and it was funny, they're like, the car cleaning place, like, thought nothing of it. They're just like, oh yeah, shell casing, let's just dump it in the trash. And then obviously there was the tampering of the evidence with, you know, how the police handled the shell casing and the bubble gum and separating it and the way they're testing and evidence and stuff like that.
Because they tested the shell casing and the lady didn't know that it was attached to bubble gum previously. So she's like, yeah, his DNA's on the shell casing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that, but that... doesn't, but it got mixed in with the bubble gum, even though it's still like, what the fuck, you were there, you know what I mean?
Right.
But
yeah,
it's, I mean, it's two different things still though, you know?
Yeah.
And it should be distinguished.
Right. Do you think it's manly to chew blue bubblicious bubble gum?
No. Not particularly, but
I
eat
awful,
a lot
awful.
Of, I well,
we
lot
found
of
out,
candy.
We found out afterwards that there was several things that probably weren't, you know, the way his father would consider a man, right?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, but that one's definitely interesting because then, you know, they're kind of linking directly to Aaron Hernandez when, obviously, I think they have plenty enough evidence to point him at the crime scene, but that kind of portrays him as the shooter because of the fact that the DNA is on the shell casing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you have
but
his
girl.
But
it was like, when you see the picture of it, I'm sorry, I just think it's so weird. When you see the picture of the shell casing with the bubblegum wrapped around it, like, at first I was like, okay. But then I was like, who would do that? If you were the one that killed somebody, like, if you're disposing of your gum, you spit it out the window, you put it back in the wrapper, you swallow it, or, you know what I mean? Like, you don't wrap it around a shell casing and put it in something. I don't know.
I just think they had so weird. Much ignorance around everything that they did. You know, like yeah. as an example, he had access to
fucking arrogant. Like what's arrogant fucks?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, he had access to his surveillance system. He didn't shut any of that shit off. He didn't like ruin everything before the detectives came in, got access to his footage. Obviously, he left the shell casing there. Doesn't think anything of it, like cleaning it out before.
But he did have like a team conference. Of house cleaners come in. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah,
before the cops.
Yep, and he was smart enough to tell his girlfriend to take the box.
Of, right.
Maybe with the gun, maybe with marijuana.
Yeah, it seems more like a gun because where did the gun go? They still don't explain where did the gun go.
Right.
But then, like you said, the argument is, oh, it's not a gun, right?
Right. But, yeah, because it was the counter argument was the fact that it was supposed to be something heavy. Obviously, the gun only weighs a few pounds. And so they were trying to say that it was something else that was in the box in the bag.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. There's so much information with this case and... You don't. It's like one of those things you just don't know who to believe or what the truth is, you know? Yeah. There's only a handful of truths. We know that three men went into that yard, the construction yard with Odin Lloyd, and Odin Lloyd died there. And we know that, though. I feel like right. we know that for a fact.
Yeah, I think for a fact we know that he was there, that the four of them were there together. Obviously, something went south. We don't know who the shooter was. We don't know, obviously, what the full motive was, whether it was an argument that went south in the car or whatnot. But obviously, I think the defense said maybe it was a possible drug deal or something gone bad. But he was definitely involved. You know, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can wrap it up to the suicide now. We know he committed suicide in his cell. Well, we know he was convicted of the Odin Lloyd shit. We know he was acquitted of the intimidation of Bradley and the fucking double homicide, right?
Right.
So, yeah, let's talk about his jail real quick and bring it home.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So, on April 14th, he was acquitted of... sorry. On April 14th, he was acquitted of the double murder. That was 7 days after deliberations started from that case. And he was acquitted of the murder. And then what's interesting about that is since he was acquitted and he didn't fully appeal the initial murder, there's some loophole in Massachusetts. I'm not sure exactly what the name of the loophole is. But it basically allows him to... Pretty much since he killed himself, allows him to consider himself yeah. the fact that
I believe it's called Ab Initio.
Ab Initio?
It's a weird name, but Whoa. Yeah, Ab Initio. But yeah. that would, like we talked about before, that would end up being abolished, so then it would get reversed.
And they overturned that basic rule that allowed him to pretty much consider himself not a murderer.
So essentially, Ab Initio no longer exists now, and because of that, now he is considered a murderer for the Odin Lloyd case.
Correct.
So it's so retroactive.
Did his family not get the money then? His daughter, because right?
Well, they're suing for something else. But
yeah, they're suing for a bunch of different things. Obviously, the CTE, and then some access to some of his other money, and then it's
because essentially the suicide is it's looked at as something that he did to be able to. Claim the money that was owed to him, right, from his contract with his family.
Yeah, and try and get it. It seemed like he was trying to get it for his daughter,
but obviously they diminished that, right, and so that they pretty much didn't pay them off, right.
Well, the Patriots organization said they would do everything in their power to make sure it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So even if they were told to pay it, they would hold it up and probably appeal that process. Yeah,
and this still. Plenty of other civil suits that are still pending against them. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty lengthy process for any of that money to, you know, to go in anybody's hands.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking it just kind of sucks that he killed himself because he's trying to just, like, set up his daughter for the future. But essentially, it just didn't work out.
Yeah. So all of us feel a little bit like, his suicide was intended as a selfless act.
I think he saw it that way. Yeah, where
might have justified it that way. You know, at the end of the day,
in other ways,
at the end of the day, you know, he probably like was like, "Oh, this shit's not for me."
But it's just weird though, because you know, he must have walked out of there, right, being acquitted of the double murder, still having Baez by his side, that potentially he might be a free man someday. You know, so it's like looking at the potential opportunity to be a free man someday versus, all right, I'm just going to call it quits now, and potentially my daughter's going to be able to benefit, you know, financially from this.
I think the CTE side in too deep on.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about CTE in the Chris Benoit episode, too, that we did in the first season when we explored the Chris Benoit murders. And, yeah, his brain looked in real bad shape. I mean, it was like gaping black in the center core of it. Mike, can you tell us more about your experience with the CTE?
Hopefully I don't got it. That's all I can tell you.
Well, and then there was, I mean...
The other suicide that was Junior Seo shot himself in the heart and said he wanted his brain to be examined. So.
Right. There's a few of those.
Well, and that was the other interesting thing, too. So obviously there's that aspect of it, is whether or not he wanted to do it so he could, his daughter could financially benefit. But then there was also the rumors that it was going to be put out there in the public forum, the fact that he had a boyfriend in prison. And so there was rumors that he was doing it because he obviously didn't want that to get out, or he didn't want to face
Kyle
the music.
Kyle McConnell.
Yeah. So he didn't want to face the music of potentially, you know, getting the shit beat out of him or whatever in prison because of the fact that, you know, some of this information is getting out there.
Now, How was that whole situation for you?
I think Kyle looks like a dweeb, and it looks like a money grabber. Like, I don't know if I...
Kyle looked like he was a twink.
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah,
he ain't cute enough to be a twink.
Like, he was like the bottom.
He hired some lawyer named Army, and dude's like, hey, listen, Aaron Hernandez... First of all, Aaron Hernandez's handwriting, if we're talking about his suicide, we need to talk about his handwriting eventually. But he's like, oh, yeah, he promised him this watch. They were in love, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's like a $40,000 watch.
$75,000 custom-made watch. Like, the shit's ridiculous to me. Like, I'm like, all right, oh, how much was this one? You guys got matching ones?
Yo.
Whoa. You got the iWatch.
Yeah. He got that iPhone watch.
Chief on
the watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, if I thought Aaron Hernandez was going to have a boyfriend in prison, it would probably be Puerto Rican and it looked just like Bass Vito. Yeah.
I would hope so.
I heard he likes Kyle him without dude, the neck.
Kyle dude has a chest tat that says fly high, which obviously Aaron Hernandez would be like, yo, you smoke weed? I smoke weed. And I know they smoked synthetic marijuana in prison together, right?
Like, you smoke weed? Yeah, I smoke weed. You smoke weed? Yeah, I suck dick. You suck dick? Damn. It's a lock.
He's on that Chandler Jones and his underwear is outside the police station shaking and shit.
But have you guys all seen Hernandez's handwriting or what is like said to be his handwriting from prison?
No, I haven't.
Can you pull it up and show them some of the notes, like in the book? Tell me if this doesn't look like high school girl handwriting. Like, it looks like shit that you would write in a note and fold it into things. It just doesn't like look like a man's football player handwriting to me.
Well, maybe that was the feminine side his father
maybe
was worried
about. Maybe it is.
About.
Like, I mean, I'm just saying, John like, Hales. It's interesting.
Not really, but...
You don't like handwriting analysis?
It's okay.
Yeah, that's,
you look like a serial killer with your handwriting.
Yeah, I look like a four-year-old on meth.
Look at this?
Well, you certainly have to.
Like, have you seen a dude's handwriting that looks like this?
All of it.
Well, he certainly had plenty of time in prison to craft his penmanship.
Yeah.
I'm confused that you guys think I'm being crazy about this.
Yeah, but I'm sure, obviously.
I'm a little biased just because my handwriting is kind of feminine, and I just don't like how you're approaching that.
That's speaking to me all wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I will say one thing.
I almost feel like it's a personal attack.
I will say it's interesting if we go into and we think about his final time in cell, right? He put slippery shampoo on the floor. He cut himself. and he, in blood, wrote 3:16. John 3:16 on his head. But Austin 3:16 says, "I just whipped your ass." Sorry. I think it's interesting, the biblical connection, right? Because if you look at Chris Benoit with his CTE shit, he was never religious either, really. And then he was drawn into the fucking religion stuff and put the Bible next to his family after he killed him, too. So there's that weird, like, religious connection where people are, like, searching for something when they're on this in these, like, deeper stages of CTE. So I just thought that that was interesting. And I heard that he also did, like, a pyramid with the eyeball and Illuminati on the fucking wall.
Yeah, he did it on the wall with his blood.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah.
And then obviously he hung himself with the bed sheet. And there was all blood and shampoo on the floor, so it was super slippery.
He was naked, right?
Yes, he was naked. Yep.
Did you see those photos?
I did not.
How about any other naked men?
No, I did not.
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, I think it's a, you know, it's a obviously compelling case or compelling story, right, from his upbringing all the way to the unfortunate part where he died. Obviously, so many different turns and twists throughout his life. You know, there was obviously a lot of positive, but then obviously there was that whole complete dark side of him, you know, that that unfortunately kind of took him to the life he ended up living, and unfortunately was kind of his fate of you know, where he ended up going and dying.
My conclusion with it is, like, CTE played a part in it, and then a part of it was his upbringing, and then another part of it was just his biology and makeup. Like, I don't think Baez likes to point to CTE and say, oh, the whole fucking thing was CTE. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of it had to do with his, like, past, you know? Gang life.
I think it was nature, you know? Nurture, and then obviously the CTE plays into nurture.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
I mean, his father probably dying, you know, obviously his father being as the person he was and him dying at a very critical stage of his life, only being 16 years old and stuff like that, he probably naturally started gravitating towards people he probably shouldn't have been associating with and stuff like that.
But
kind of as his outlet.
But in the grand scheme of things, you know, like, how would someone be able to just, like, you know, kill your significant other's, you know, spouse?
That was, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you gotta kind of be kind
of... It's, like, heartless.
And that motive... You gotta be pretty twisted
to do that shit, just, you know what I mean? So
that motive is just... Like, if that's the dead honest motive, and, you know, we'll obviously never know. I mean, it just seems like that's a shitty way of, you know, like, completely heartless. Like, you'd kill somebody because you felt like they wronged you because, you know... They didn't say hi to you when they walked in the house or something.
It was fucking petty. It was petty. That's the word you're looking for.
Childlike.
What about... Very petty. Here's the probably... And I think a lot of people, like, when they're analyzing this case, they'll ask themselves that, too. You know, and it's a good question. But I think also a good question to ask, too, is go back to... because we're saying, okay, he killed Odin Lloyd, in our opinion, and we don't think he did the other stuff, possibly. Like, the other stuff is much less uncertain. I personally don't think he did... the double murder, and I don't think he shot Bradley, in my opinion. But I think the part that is disturbing is Bradley did do the double murder, and you're still fucking hanging out with that guy, chilling hard, after you saw him do that.
Right.
That's something that I feel like people don't really think about, that part of it. And that's almost as bad, you know, as killing someone.
Yeah. And I'm sure he's probably seen plenty of other things that haven't come out from Bradley as well.
Right.
You know.
I mean, this is a guy, he's got the laundry list of criminal activity, you know?
Sharif the shooter.
Psychopath.
Sharif the shooter, exactly.
And who knows what we don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. There's so much more to it, you know?
Famous people can get away with things.
Yeah, and it's like everybody that contributed to try and explain the story, whether it's the brother or people involved, you know, they're all just saying what they know. But there's stuff that nobody knows.
Right.
That's the scary shit, too. But
yeah. You never really know somebody, you know?
Yeah, you gotta... You guys... Okay, so his fiancé... This is the last thing I'm gonna say. His fiancé took his name, right? And then later, I think it was like 13 months after he passed away, had another child with someone else, and her Instagram is my favorite thing to look at right now. So it's Shay J. Hernandez. Everyone needs to look at it on Instagram, and don't judge too hard.
That's great insight.
Thank you.
Anyone else with some final thoughts on this?
I don't know. I thought you and Eddie did a good job breaking down the whole story. I don't know. It's just it's sad when you strive to, you know, make it out, and your demons or your past or whatever hinder you, and you get stuck in that loop and just do stupid shit to ruin it.
Yeah.
Because not everybody can do, you know what? Not everybody that thinks they're going to make it out makes it out. And when you do and fuck it all up, it's just almost like a waste.
He had so much potential.
Yeah.
And just pissed it all away, you know?
Exactly.
For what? To be tough.
Out of pride? It almost feels like it was out of pride, you know? Like, or self-importance. I don't know. It's just real petty.
Right. And it's like, if you want to be prideful about something, like, be prideful about taking care of your kid, you know?
Right.
Or fucking
doing the right thing.
Yeah. But then again, you know, he had a fucked up life.
Yeah, and I'll always go back to that question of just how impactful was CTE. Obviously, they donated his brain to was it Boston BU, yeah. I believe. And obviously, they said it was like one of the worst cases that they've ever seen. Obviously, you know, there's not like normal healthy people that are just donating their brain to get the CTE scans and all that stuff.
It's usually people obviously, who have had trauma, correct?
Yep. But obviously, they said at his age, it was pretty much the worst they've ever seen. I think it was, was stage four.
It was three, but out of four stages. But when you take into account how young he was,
that's pretty bad.
It's crazy.
Because
he was in his early 20s.
Yeah.
So that's something that you typically see in a football player past the end of their career.
Yeah.
Just
out of curiosity. Sad story. Do you know Chris Benoit, what stage his brain was at?
I think his was similar. He was one of the worst, too. And I think his was also studied at Boston.
He was a lot older, though, so I'm just trying to, you know what I mean?
Right. So he was way older.
Him being that young and being at that stage,
yep.
You know, maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
It's definitely part of it. I just don't think it's all of it.
No. And I agree with you on that.
But again, they did say he got a violent knockout hit in high school. So who knows? Who knows?
I think it was just a perfect storm of a lot of different things that was going on that pretty much made him who, unfortunately, he was.
Yeah. Mike, anything?
No.
Gene?
You guys covered it. When I was reading the note, I found that interesting that he was shouting out musical artists and shit.
Yeah.
Who did he shout out?
Rick Ross, The Game, Meek Mill.
Meek Mills? Yeah.
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z, yeah.
Yeah, that was on his final
Savage
note.
Garden.
Yeah, he mentioned that in the note to his girl. Yeah.
Mm.
I guess that was a song that they enjoyed.
No, she sounded like they didn't even listen to it together. She's just like, oh, we both like slow jams.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
That's so awkward.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Phil was like, oh, that's a song you liked. And then she was like, yeah, we just like slow jams. It was kind
of
weird.
So maybe he thought it was a song they shared together, but it was one of his other side pieces or his boyfriend in prison.
Or his boyfriend Eddie in prison. Right? His boyfriend's Steady Eddie in prison.
Yeah, you dirty.
Nah, man.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up. For this week, I think this is a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
We could have gone on probably another hour about it, but we wanted to kind of keep it somewhat compact, and it's like fucking midnight. So we thank you guys for tuning in again to Evil Examined. Again, check us out, www.evilexamined.com. Check out the Sinister Store for some dark horror books. We'll be coming soon with some more odd news and Forbidden Five, and we have a story about a child cult and cannibalism not far off the horizon. So thank you, everyone. Have a great evening.
Good evening. Yeah, whatever your name is, hey.
was in that house, or anybody else was in there against their will.